Hey, this is Richard Patrick from Filter. We just made a brand new record called The Algorithm, and we're coming to Australia, and you can hear all about this on The Vinyl Guide.
This episode is brought to you by VMGVinyl.com. Professional record cleaning, restoration, rejuvenation, and grading.
Refresh your records with VMGVinyl.com.
This episode is brought to you by Groove Washer, the best record cleaners and protective sleeves for your vinyl collection. Ask for the Groove Washer from your local shop or go to GrooveWasher.com. Discount code VinylGuide10. And now, on with the show. Welcome to The Vinyl Guide, the podcast for record collectors and music nerds. Here's your host, the biggest record nerd of them all, Nate Goyer.
Well, hey everyone, it's Nate. Welcome to episode 437 of The Vinyl Guide, 437th episode, Jiminy Crickets. I hope you're well. I hope you're enjoying your music. And I'm even interested to hear and even see what it is you're listening to. Yeah. If you got an Instagram account and you feel like putting your music up there or take a snap of the record label, put it on Instagram, tag me. Give me a tag at Vinyl Guide and let me get a peep at what's doing on that turntable of yours. Today, good people, I'm sharing a conversation I had with Richard Patrick of Filter. And he's quite an entertaining dude. Good guy to talk to, always has an opinion, and he and I discuss a lot of things, including the new Filter LP, The Algorithm. We talk about Richard's recent reunion with Nine Inch Nails, playing Hey Man, Nice Shot with Trent Reznor and crew, what that moment was like, how it came together. We talk about the fact that Richard is not mellowing with age, the Pledge Music debacle, what he thinks of AI and the impact on music, his experience with dealing with unpredictable electronics on stage. And of course, we also talk to Richard about the upcoming Filter tour of Australia, Auckland, Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, Adelaide, and yes, even Perth. Hello to my West Coast friends way over there. It's great Filter's hitting there as well. Filter tickets are limited. Go to metropolistouring.com to lock yours in. Now, before we get to the interview, I also want to share that we had Richard on the show way back in 2019. Wow, how innocent we were back then. Episode 178. If you're a fan of Filter, check that episode out as well. Oh, and by the way, while you're going in the Wayback Machine, check out these other episodes you may be interested in. Royce Kopp were on the show, episode 364. Amon Tobin joined us for episode 357. Jarboe of Swans, episode 329. Al Jorgensen of Ministry, episode 302. John Sanders of Alarm, episode 228, and even going way back to episode 140, Wolfgang Fleur of Kraftwerk. Guys, just make sure you follow The Vinyl Guide in your podcast app. You get access to all of these and hundreds more. So get your coffee and teas ready, and let's get into our conversation with Richard Patrick of Filter.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this week on The Vinyl Guide, we welcome back to the show Mr. Richard Patrick of Filter, who is coming back with us with a new record. He's got a tour of Australia coming up. And God damn it, 21 years clean and sober. Congratulations, Patrick. A lot of great stuff's going on.
Yeah, a lot of really cool things are happening lately. It's pretty cool. I like it.
Excellent, man. Well, glad to see you're in good form. The new album, The Algorithm. There's a vinyl available, goldenrobotrecords.com. And of course, Filter, you're coming back to Australia. And
officialfilter.com too.
Officialfilter.com. Yeah. There's some clear vinyl.
Australia's got its own thing going on, probably, because we'd have to ship it to Australia.
Yeah, Australia's always got their own thing going on.
Whereas Golden Robot's probably going to have it right there.
Possibly. Well, I saw there was a couple different pressings. There was a clear one. There was a black one. Is one of them limited? I couldn't tell.
I don't know. I'm just in charge of the music part. But there's limited edition. What are those things that go on the record player that like is the it's a record mat?
Bladder mat. Yeah.
Bladder mat. There's one of those. All of this is available online, officialfilter.com, merch. Mm-hmm. I'm not really good at selling myself on the online stuff.
Fair enough. Are you a bit of a record nerd? Do you like playing records, or are you full digital?
I'm fully digital. I liked CDs because they sounded better and they were easier to handle. And every time I got my brother's records, every time I used them, I might scratch them and they would torture me. It would beat me up if I scratched their records. So I had to be super careful. And when I got CDs, that was kind of like my world. That was kind of like, well, you have records, I have CDs. So
did you guys have a lot of records around the house?
Oh, tons. Yeah. My dad was an avid musical lover. He, back in like 1974, he bought like this huge stereo for himself. And he used to crank Neil Diamond, Hot August Nights. And that's how I fell in love with music, because I was like, you know, 4 or 5 and got into music that way.
Mm, you saw how important it was to him and you're like, ooh. Yeah. I like that attention.
That's, yeah, he loved music. Yeah, my dad was an avid fan.
Just a fan? Did he play at all?
He played trumpet. He was first chair in the Virginia Tech Orchestra, but he put it down as soon as he had my brother Robert, his firstborn child. Mm-hmm. And he just kind of put it down and got into banking and raised the kids.
Do you think that affected him? Like he felt he had to put it down? Was there any lament about that?
No, he just had to focus on being a banker.
Yeah.
He was a Rhodes Scholar when we were young. He was actually in England when I was born, and we were at Boston near, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT. And he did 6 months at Oxford when because he was a Rhodes Scholar, so he went around and mm-hmm. went to all the different universities he could.
So besides Neil Diamond, what other records were there in the house? What was the
Pink
soundtrack?
Floyd the Wall.
Of the Wall.
Pink Floyd the Wall was huge in my house. My brother Robert loved Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath. My sister Karen liked Kiss. She played Kiss. I used to be into Kiss. And then one day my brother came back from college and he's like, forget Kiss. This is the Clash. You are now punk. And I got into punk music when I was like 12.
Far out. Okay. Because I've always wondered kind of what were those musical elements? What was that recipe that added up to the Richard Patrick of the filter music? Yeah. Can you pinpoint half a dozen different bands that kind of were formative in those years?
I would say The Clash, U2, Skinny Puppy, Ministry. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Those are the bands that I was gravitating towards in the beginning when I put Filter together.
Wow.
And of course, I was coming from Nine Inch Nails, so I guess there's a little Nine Inch Nails in there too.
Mm-hmm.
But just because I'd been there for 3 or 4 years.
But leading into Nine Inch Nails, I suppose Skinny Puppy was probably pretty central in that.
Yeah. Well, Skinny Puppy was all about avant-garde, like breaking the rules. You know, they were, you know, so abstract and so crazy that I was just blown away by their originality. All those bands that I mentioned were so original when they came out that like U2, The Unforgettable Fire is like just the most epic record I could ever, and you know, ever imagine. You know, all Land of Rape and Honey by Ministry was huge, and All by Pink Floyd, and you know, and they all were like, they all talked about, you know, their subject matter was all about like politics, and it was topical and about pain and, you know, and animal cruelty or whatever, you know, like all different kinds, you know, like the, you know, of subject matter, but all kind of serious, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like there wasn't anything frivolous. There was nothing cheesy about any of the bands that I listened to.
And the more intense the music, it seems like the more, I won't say sensitive, but I guess the more humane the subject matter was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Skinny Puppy was against animal testing and animal cruelty of all types. And that's what they were about. That's what they stood for. And like, it was so amazing to see it in concert and like have it all tied together, like the music and the visuals and everything would tie it together.
Nowadays, it's not so much of an issue with playing live and digital instruments. But back in the, I think the probably the late 80s, early 90s, a lot of those, the instruments, I know like the emulators, the things like Front 242 used or Skinny Puppy, a lot of that was very unpredictable.
Right.
Did you experience that in the early days, I guess, with Nine Inch Nails and early Filter?
Trent had a pretty good dial on it. Like he understood everything that he was doing, and he worked with Sean Bevan and Chris Frenna, and then he worked with like John Fryer and Adrian Sherwood and Flood, and he was always surrounded by people who are really tech savvy. So the sampler was pretty much like, this is what it's for, this is what we're using it for. And he, when we took it live, it worked flawlessly. Like he was crazy about it. Like what we did was we had a controller on stage that we would beat up, and he would, you know, involve in the show, he would attack it and break keys and stuff. That was usually a DX7. And then there was a MIDI cable that went off and connected to a very, very happy, you know, Akai sampler. Or emulator 2 sampler, and it was Akai, I think, at that time, and he put all the samples in that, and it was a nice securely off stage where it couldn't be hurt, you know. And the controller got abused pretty heavily.
They had to replace the controller every other gig, but the rack mount stuff was.
Well, what they did was they got keys, because he would break the keys with the mic stand, so they got tons of keys, and they would replace the keys on the keyboard. Sometimes he would do damage so bad that he would have to replace the controller. And that's why they bought so many DX7s back in the day, because that was his favorite controller.
Right. Would you destroy your guitars as well?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
There's very few guitars that made it out of there alive. And the two that I had that I kind of left with, I sold to the Hard Rock for an undisclosed amount of money, but they're nice and taken care of in the Hard Rock Casino in Vegas, or the Hard Rocks all around the world, actually.
They're in pieces.
They were still kind of working. They were bad, but they were still kind of working when I had them. So hats off to Marky Ray for saving those for me, my guitar tech at the time.
You guys ever have any gigs where, you know, you the stuff just wasn't working? Like, you know, you'd broken it or it'd been abused and hadn't been repaired?
Yep. There was a faulty quad box the first day of Lollapalooza, and we threw a temper tantrum and walked off stage, and they figured out what it was. It was a faulty quad box on the stage, and we could explain the problem. It was affecting our whole MIDI rack that we had, our samplers and everything like that. And so we threw a temper tantrum and walked off the stage, and MTV was up our butt. Like, what happened? And we're like, hey, sometimes technology just doesn't come through, and it didn't work for us this time. So yeah, we've had some embarrassing moments back in the day.
A couple months ago, I saw the reunion with Nine Inch Nails, the gig, I think in was it Cleveland? That's something I thought I'd never see. How did that come about?
Oh, Trent. Well, it all kind of started when the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame happened for Nine Inch Nails. Trent had found out that I was kind of upset that I wasn't inducted, but he explained it to me, and it makes sense. I was only in the band for 4 years, but to me, it was the hard four. It was the van. It was the fucking clubs. It was, you know,
sweat.
Sweating, you know, getting my ass kicked on a nightly basis, you know, like it was a hardcore, the early years, the really tough time, and before all the fancy buses and all the nice, you know, all the nice plane rides and everything like that. And Trent explained it to me. He said, you know, I could only have like 8 dudes or 9 dudes. And, you know, you were in and out of the band in 4 years. So you were only there for 4 years. So they kind of just didn't think that you, you know, should be in it. And I understood that. But Trent said, but how about we play a show in Cleveland and you come out and you play with us? And I said, that's amazing. So the first round got canceled with COVID. Then the second year it got canceled. And so the last year was like the first real year where COVID wasn't kicking our ass. And it happened September 24th, 2022. In Blossom Music Center, Nine Inch Nails reunited with Richard Patrick's Filter's Richard Patrick. And, it was amazing. I had a blast, and Trent was super sweet, and he gave me a lot of responsibilities, and I did the best I could. I had to sing Eraser, and I was fighting back tears. And, it was so emotional. There was easily 20,000 people there. You know, he had Nine Inch Nails learn Hey Man, Nice Shot. And we played Hey Man, Nice Shot, which is my song from Filter. Yeah.
Was that a bit of a surprise? Was that?
When he called me, he's like, how about we learn Hey Man, Nice Shot? And I was just like, oh, Trent, that would be just the most fantastic thing ever. That would be just such a huge tip of the hat, nice job, Rich. Nine Inch Nails playing Hey Man, Nice Shot. Like, that's the biggest tip of the hat I could get from Trent. And Trent was extremely sweet, and he was like, we're doing it because we need this. We need the song, Rich. It's awesome. It's a hit, He was just so gracious like that. And then he had me sing the second verse of Head Like a Hole, which was really, really like a really exciting. And I was hyperventilating when I was singing it. And it was just so, it was just so amazing. I had so much fun. It was really great.
There seemed to be, I guess there were many years where there was a bit of back and forth. I don't know what the relationship was like between you and Trent. I mean, only you and Trent know that, right? But I mean, it didn't seem to be on the friendliest of terms. And Trent always seemed to be kind of a guy working through things. And in recent, probably the recent decade or so, he's become this elder statesman. He seems to have kind of really, become this. Is that kind of how have you maintained that relationship over the years like that?
Yeah. I mean, basically, Trent and I we text back and forth all the time, goofing off and saying crazy things that we used to say when we were kids, and just constantly reminding each other of all the fun we had. But he's turned into this amazing composer. He's won Oscars. He's Nine Inch Nails can sell out any venue at once when he plays. And, to him and me are just, he's very sweet to me and vice versa. I hope to be a great friend in that respect. But it's wild. It's cool. We when we were young, we were pissed at each other because I'm quitting and you can't quit. I fire you or whatever. He didn't say that, but you know what I mean? Like, it was tumultuous.
Animosity, understandable, right?
But we were drinking a lot, and that makes you really emotionally unbalanced, and you're not really thinking, you're kind of going with your gut on everything. And, so there was a couple of tumultuous years in the beginning when I left, but then like after a while, it was just like, look, I'm happy, you're happy, and now that we're both sober, it's like, wow, we have kids, we're successful. Like, what else could we want for each other? We want each other to be happy and healthy. I mean, how many people do you know with relationships going back like 40 years? You know what I mean? In your life, how many people do you know that go that far back? I want to know all those guys. I want to know people, in my youth. I want, cause they knew me before all this crazy stuff happened. And, so that's the way I view it. It's just a good relationship to have, to know people before everything got crazy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They keep you grounded. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, things like social media and things like that's enabled me to kind of reconnect with people that, you know, I hadn't seen in 30 plus years.
Or whatever.
And then there are some of them where I'm like, you know, there's a reason why we didn't remain in contact. We got nothing in common. But there are a few others, especially, you know, I lived in California. I now moved to Australia. There was a handful of people that really made the effort to stay in touch. And I really appreciate that. You know, you may not have had that insight, you know, without those tools.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And when did you move to Australia?
2001.
Wow. So that's a long time.
Yeah.
What were the reasons?
I was chasing a girl.
You're chasing a girl. That's awesome.
I caught her. Actually, more than caught her. We've got a couple of kids. So it all worked out. But you've been to Australia.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing.
Beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
And you're coming back as well. Mm-hmm. You've got this tour booked in April. And actually, tickets are going very well. I think a couple of them have already sold out. So
that's awesome. Yeah.
It's been a while. What are your memories of Australia?
Oh, fantastic. Well, I was just there for the big day out, or the shockwave, or whatever that thing was called. It was fantastic. I love Australia. It's beautiful country. The people are amazing. You speak English, you know, the food's awesome. And, you know, the rock crowd is fantastic. And I just remember being, you know, pretty wasted the first time I went. and now this time will be a vivid, vivid, beautiful, crystal clear memory for my future years. And I can't wait. It's going to be fantastic. We're going to be playing headlining shows, which means we're going to play for like an hour and a half, and or longer, maybe. But we're gonna really enjoy it, and it's gonna mean a lot to us, and we're gonna take it very seriously, and rock out.
Well, we're looking forward to having you. Yeah, Australians, they're really good at loving life. That's the one thing I noticed when I moved here. It's like the competition was not as important as the mateship, right? And so a lot of really, really strong.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like, there's a different vibe. It's a cooler, more laid back vibe.
So the algorithm, is there a theme? Is there some sort of, I imagine it's probably inspired by the pandemic. Yeah.
The theme is essentially the astronaut comes back from space to Earth to find it completely destroyed. And he's looking for clues as to why it was destroyed. So all the videos and all the imaging is about this astronaut with a broken helmet, and he's coming back. And like the obliteration video, there's a girl that is running around, and she's trying to protect her cat that you find out in the end. Spoiler alert, there's a cat. You know, she's one of the survivors on planet Earth. And the next videos that are all going to be about an astronaut that kind of is in an apocalyptic, you know, world and stumbles upon people.
I heard Algorithm, I heard the album, and I felt it was almost a return to form. To me, being early on Filter, Title of Record, Short Bus, especially in those early days when I had a little bit more anger in me, those really resonated with me. And listen to the Algorithm, it's like, okay, there's that energy is there. By your affirmation, it sounds like you would agree with that, yeah?
Yeah, I just wanted a record that would reflected where I was at mentally, and I am not mellowing with age. You know what I mean? I am not mellowing with age. I mean, people say that about artists that reach a certain, you know, age. And there's two songs on the record that are mellow, like, because I love that side of my voice. Like, I can sing a very soft and sensitive kind of sounding music, as well as screaming and, you know, singing in a higher register. And so there's that element. But like, for the most part, I like tearing it up, you know. And the song, the record starts off with a song called The Drowning, and it's about a friend of mine who is just absolutely drinking himself into oblivion every night, and he's drowning, and he refuses to like hear us saying, dude, please come back in and we'll help you, and he just refuses. So, you know, I'm starting the record off in such a great place, because it's like, subject matter wise, I'm serious as hell. And then it goes into the next song, which is up against the wall, which is, you know, up against the wall. I feel that the wall and southern border would be ridiculous, and it would be hard to keep maintain, and it would block off a lot of, you know what I mean.
It's just so goofy. It's just such a goofy concept.
Yeah, it's, you know, but I mean, but then up against the wall is as a return, you know, in the sense that, like, you know, I feel like my back is pushed up against a wall, and I feel like I have to say something, you know. So there's different kind of there's several, you know, version, you know, like ways you could hear these lyrics.
Mm.
So now, there's different interpretations you could have.
Now, I heard a crazy story. And by the way, yeah, I'm looking forward to getting the record, the physical record, so I can actually kind of pour through the lyric sheet and kind of work it out.
Well, that's now, great. Yeah, we have all the lyrics printed, so yeah.
Beautiful. Now, I heard a crazy story. Tell me if this is true or not. It's about an event at a Veruca Salt concert.
Mm. Yeah.
Louise called you and Brian out from the stage.
We'll be back after these messages.
Well, hey there, record collectors. There's a new service available that specializes in record cleaning, restoring, sticker removal, and professional grading.
VMGVinyl.com.
VMG Vinyl can help you make the most of your collectible records. From professional cleaning of records and sleeves,
removing old price tags and store stickers,
dry cleaning and rejuvenation of old shrink wrap to make it look like new, even providing you a professional play-tested third-party grade with either removable grading or encasing in plastic, you have a wide range of choices at VMGVinyl.com.
Buying a highly collectible record and you want it checked out by an expert?
VMG Vinyl can do that too. Head over there now and see what VMGVinyl.com can do for you and your collection. That's VMGVinyl.com, the one-stop shop for professional third-party grading, cleaning, and record restoration. That's VMGVinyl.com.
Oh, and hey, record nerds, don't forget to clean your records with the very best and safest record cleaner, the Groove Washer. Make your records look and sound their very best and store them with confidence using the new Groove Washer Groove Guard record sleeves. You gotta try this out. It makes a huge difference to the quality of your vinyl experience. Ask for the Groove Washer by name at your local record store and accept no substitutes. Or head over to groovewasher.com and use discount code VINYLGUIDE. 10.
All hail the Groove Washer.
That's groovewasher.com, discount code VINYLGUIDE10.
Now we return to the program, already in progress.
No limits. I heard a crazy story. Tell me if this is true or not. It's about an event at a Veruca Salt concert.
Mm. Yeah.
Louise called you and Brian out from the stage.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's true. And Brian and I actually worked on four songs, and we were going to do a record called Rebus, but it just fell apart with the Pledge Music debacle that happened. They took all our fans' money, and they wrecked it for us. So Brian and I didn't want to work together in that capacity anymore. We were just like fed up. So I just I told Brian I still wanted to use the songs, and he said, sure. And then America and Thoughts and Prayers came out as singles just for themselves, just on their own, because I felt antsy, and I figured I knew it was 7 years since my last record, so I was trying to fill the void. But the other two songs are Summer Child and Command Z that Brian did with me, and so we did work together as a result of that concert.
Okay, so you guys are, just in case people, listeners haven't heard this, from what I understand, you guys are at a Veruca Salt concert.
Yeah.
Not attending together, totally separate.
I picked him up. I picked him up and drove.
Okay.
Him. Yeah.
Okay, so you guys were like next to each other.
Brian doesn't drive. Brian doesn't drive in L.A., which is crazy, because you have to drive in L.A. If you know anything about America, you have to have a car. Like, there's no public transportation. There's none of that. So I picked up Brian, took him to the show, and then she said, I know that Brian and Richard are here together, and I want you guys to get over your shit and start making music again. And we just looked at each other and we're like, yeah, let's try and do it. You know, let's try and make some music. So,
oh, that's lovely. Now, talking about Pledge Music, you guys are working together. Pledge Music, obviously, you know, bunch of snakes. Mm. They ripped off a bunch of fans and artists and whatnot. Yep. Walk us through kind of how you experienced that implosion of the company. And it sounds like it almost
started off, it was rumors. And Brian was telling me that these guys are going to go under. And, you know, Brian's a bit of a conspiracy theorist. So, like, everything he says is kind of like hinged in. It feels a little weird. But then another guy was talking about it. His name was Ken Andrews from Failure.
Failure. Right.
And he was just like going off about it. And then sure enough, we got a call from one of the guys that had built the company. And he said he was kind of asked to gently tell the bands that there is no money and they were ripped off. And like, he called us up and gave us the skinny and just said, yeah, this is over and it's imploding. And there's not going to be a website and there's not going to be anything. It's all coming down. Right now. And so like, it was like, oh, okay. So we had just started this huge campaign where everybody was going to participate and our fans were going to be able to help us build this record and they were going to get behind the scenes videos and all that stuff. And it was a great idea. I loved Pledge. The idea was great. It's just the management, they took all the money. They didn't realize the bands were the ones who were supposed to get the money to make the records. You know, and the administration was going to get what was left over, and there wasn't much left over, but they were like, you know, living high on the hogs. And it turned out to be a total scam. And it's kind of symbolic of what it's like to be a musician these days, because the internet, the website is the place that makes all the money. Like Spotify Music just raised their amount from $9 a month to $14. Do you think we're making any more money? Do you think the musicians are going to make any more money?
Not unless you're Joe Rogan. No.
Nope. Yeah. No, you're not going to get paid. You're not going to get any more money. And the websites make out the website. The internet was supposed to help us, and it's turned out to be one of the worst things about it. Worst things that's happened to music, and look what's happening to film with the writer's strike and everything like that. The actor's strike.
Yeah, and being a musician, we'll get back to Pledge Music in a bit. But you've always seemed to have had kind of an eye toward the future and the machines and technology. I mean, that's the way I've kind of read it anyway. I imagine you've probably got some thoughts on AI and music.
Yeah. At some point there has to be a human being to like make it great. You know what I mean? Like you have to be able to like there's a song, The Drowning. I press on my keyboard. It was a guitar part. I pressed a chord on my keyboard and hit random on an arpeggiator. And the arpeggiator went bum, 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 and wrote this crazy part. And so we learned it. We learned the crazy part that the computer came up with that was random. And lo and behold, that's the bridge section to The Drowning. You know, so The Drowning is literally, I used a little AI on that to like create this bizarre guitar performance. So in the hands of an expert, it's very good. It works. But it's hopefully it makes songwriting easier and not shittier. You know what I mean? Like
that. Well, what you just described to me, I'm not sure I would call it AI as much as almost like a happy accident.
Yeah.
If you know, like I used to work in studios and pre-Pro Tools, so a sound designer, and I'd do something weird and it would make this sound that was like, that's actually really cool. I had no, I didn't purposefully do that.
But that's happy accident. And that's Brian Eno came up with that term, happy accident.
Okay.
Brian Eno did. And just something, a ghost in the machine does something and it's like, oh, wow, let's use this. So, yeah, I think it's going to be like anything else. It's going to be abused. It's like auto-tune. Auto-tune is abused by so many people to the point where they're not singing. They're not singing. There's a band that's kind of famous around, and I'm going to keep them anonymous, but there's a band that where the singer literally isn't singing, he's faking it. And
Motley Crue. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not, I don't know about Motley Crue, but there's, believe it or not, there's multiple.
I'm sure there are.
You know, and I just think it's cheesy as hell. Like, you're just not, what are you doing then? You know what I mean? Like, for me, EDM is kind of like that, where it's like, of course, no one's really playing. It's all on tracks. Of course it's on tracks. Who cares? I mean, Rez, I don't think she's literally mixing and, you know, doing her music, but her visuals are cool and the vibe is cool and she's put together in a great set and it's fun to see her and her cool glasses and stuff like that. And, you know, so I forgive her and I forgive, you know, dead mouse and all these other people that have a big 40, and I do it with my electronic set. You know, I have a DJ set that I have that's like, you know, 45 minutes long, and it's one big huge WAV file. I just hit play on my phone and it plays the whole thing, and I sit there and go, yeah, what's up? You know, I mean, you know,
yeah. Well, you're not posing with a bunch of instruments or anything. You're not doing the Partridge Family thing.
I'm up there with my phone just going, fuck yeah, this is it. This is what I did for you. And you can only hear it when I play live. It's not released. So, you know, I mean, it's cool shit, you know, but there's a lot of abuse going out there and AI could be abused. You know, we'll have to wait and see what happens.
Well, I mean, right now you can go up and say, you know, to certain AI algorithms, websites, and say,
Bing!
You know, right, product placement
algorithms.
Write a song in the symptom of filter. Right, write us a filter-ish song, but singing about bumblebees or whatever, and they can actually compile something that will sound, you know, to people casually familiar with filter, it'll sound like your voice and perhaps part of the stuff.
Yeah, that's awfully scary.
Yeah. Well, that's now. Really
scary. Yeah. That's scary. That's bogus. You know.
Yeah.
That's not going to be cool. But it's going to be abused, and it's going to happen.
I almost think that on the other side of this, there's got to be some sort of like almost acoustic, getting back to the roots. Because at some point, AI is going to no one's going to trust it, so they're going to have to find something authentic, and it's going to just kind of really almost peel back to an unplugged type thing.
Maybe. We'll see where, I mean, it could all end up sounding like Star Wars, you know, bing, 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 you know, who knows? I mean, like, you know, the music in Star Wars, like, it's just.
Oh, Cantina Band.
You know.
Yeah. Well, I always think things have a return. They have a, you know, they expand and collapse.
You know, the player pianos came out with the roll of you know, music that you put on the thing and it would spin it. And they thought that was going to kill music, you know, like, oh, the player piano is going to ruin piano playing and blah, blah, blah. No, people want a real piano player at their wedding, you know what I mean? Or in their club, you know? So, I mean, it's just a matter of, I mean, we were on tour with Rob Zombie and Alice Cooper, and we just had like 21 shows. And believe me, we were fucking live. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was live. Now, we have backing tracks for all the computer stuff that we do, because I'm industrial. My feet are planted in the industrial genre. You know what I mean? So there's a computer playing, you know, weird sounds that we could only create in the studio that would take a fleet of keyboard players to play perfectly. And we just don't have the money to be able to bring all those people. There's no way. And, you know, so, but it's still very live. You know, we're a live band. I'm singing, the guys are singing, my background singers, Bobby and Johnny, and, you know, Elias is back there playing real drums, and it's live, you know, and there's no way around it. And, but it still sounds really fucking good because we really practiced and worked hard. And so, you know, people see that, and that's why we've had this resurgence in the last year, because, you know, we've proven ourselves on the road with Rob Zombie, and we're going to do that in Australia. We're going to come back, and we're going to show you exactly why we're the resurgence is real and why we're having a good comeback, you know.
Now, one thing I've noticed is your voice, you're still able to sing a lot of those tracks that you did as a much younger man. What's kind of the secret for that?
The secret is don't do cocaine.
Let me write that down. Hang on.
Don't do drugs. Don't do drinking. Don't smoke. Drink herbal tea and warm up. Those are the secrets. Like, but a lot of it, like the, even the stuff when I was younger, like, my God, I was smoking and drinking and going crazy. And I could barely keep my voice going for like two or three shows, you know, and now it's just, it's a breeze because I take good care of myself and I'm sober and, I don't party like I used to when I was a little kid. So I've had an easier time in my later years as a singer, as opposed to when I was a young man and I was just screaming everything and like, really over singing, over approaching it, like, you know, singing poorly and not singing with finesse and accuracy. Well,
drugs and chemicals aside, I would imagine early on you were doing a lot of screaming, perhaps with not as much training. Have you had to kind of get into
it? Oh yeah, I went to a guy named Eric Vitro who lives here in Burbank, and he gave me the key to success. He showed me how to warm up my voice in a very strange way. And I do this thing where I go, Mimo, 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 Mimo. And it like warms up your throat and all these different weird ways to flex your muscles behind your singing muscles. Like, you know, when you work out, there's this, but there's also the retraction. You know, that's the other side of like, there's this, but you've got to do this. You got to do both ways. That's the same with your voice. So by doing like rah, and all these other sounds, you're working out the backside of your voice as opposed to just the front side, which is the singing side, which is like, you know, singing.
Okay. So your shows are 90, 120 minutes.
Yeah.
Is it an effort to do that now, or you got to?
No, it's for like an hour and 20, an hour, 30 minutes. I usually do pretty well. I keep it together. I can do like three in a row, four in a row and keep it together. And, you know, if I get sick, I have steroids, so I can take steroids if I ever get sick, you know, and that usually helps me when I get sick. Like I'll catch a cold or something for sure, usually once on a tour because of the amount of traveling that you're doing. And, I just talk to doctors. I'm constantly going to my vocal doctor and making sure I get checkups, and he does laryngoscopies or whatever those are called, where they look down your throat and they check out your vocal cords and make sure you're okay. And I just do all that stuff, and I listen to my doctor, and it's basically you just do warm-ups. You do warm-ups. You don't eat a lot of, like, you don't drink a lot of, like, you know what I mean? You stay away from dehydrants like Coca-Cola and things that dehydrate you a little bit, and you just take care of yourself and you'll be fine.
And don't be a maniac.
And don't be crazy. Don't be a drug addict. Be sobers.
Now, the last time we spoke, it was for the title of Record Reissue, and in that you predicted there probably wouldn't be an Amalgamate vinyl reissue, but look what happened.
Amalgamate!
How did that reissue come about?
Kraft Music's Rhino, or Kraft on Concord. They just wanted to reissue it, and I was like, great. And they went into their box, and they found all kinds of DAT tapes of remixes and stuff like that, and I figured, yeah, let's do it, and they did it, and here it is, and I signed a bunch, and we sold a bunch, and we're selling more, and now it's the Algorithm's turn, and then maybe we'll do a short bus next year, or, you know, we'll kind of revitalize, you know, every 5 years we'll just keep doing it, you know. But there's other records out there too that are amazing, like The Sun Comes Out Tonight and Trouble with Angels and Crazy Eyes. So I hope that we get to do that with all those records.
Was there anything that was totally scrapped because of the pledge thing? Like anything that is, yeah, that like yeah, go ahead.
Rebus was scrapped. The record Rebus with Brian Lee's gang was scrapped because of Pledge Music.
Yeah.
I just went ahead and I took a few of his songs and put them on the algorithm, and then fleshed out the algorithm with the stuff I wrote with different people like Zach Monowitz and Sam Tenez and Mark Jackson, Ian Scott.
But you think at some point we may be able to see kind of what that project was originally intended to do?
It came out as America and Thoughts and Prayers. And it was going to be totally political, completely 100% political. So you can see those videos on YouTube. I directed the Thoughts and Prayers video and shot it myself. And then we did America with Vincente, and it came out amazing. And those are the two places it lives as singles.
Do you have a lot of outtakes of filter material?
No. I mean, there's a few songs I did with Brian that are outtakes, but they'll probably never see the light of day, sadly.
Okay. So a Short Bus box set is probably not something in the future.
Yeah. No, probably not. Just because there was, it really, we did the record and put it out. Like, we did as much stuff as we could and put it out immediately. There was very little, like, there was a couple of dictaphone like demos that we did, but like that we released, it was all put out.
Well, all right. I think I'll be able to live without a Short Bus box set, but I look forward to getting that record, the copy of The Algorithm on vinyl, officialfilter.com. Aussies can order at goldenrobotrecords.com. There's a clear vinyl. There's a black vinyl. Have you already had the test pressings? You already had?
Yeah, I've listened to the test pressings and I approved them.
Excellent. All right. They've got Richard's stamp on them. Again, officialfilter.com. Australians, you lucky, lucky people. Filter is back the month of April. Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, Adelaide, Perth. You can get your tickets at metropolistouring.com. And of course, you can see the dates and get more information at officialfilter.com. Richard, thank you so much for coming
thank
on
you
the show.
Thank
all
you.
All right. For having. Travel safe and take care of that voice.
You got it, brother.
Oh, man, that's a good dude right there. Looking forward to catching the shows in Australia. Oh, and by the way, there's an extended version of this interview up at patreon.com/vinylguide. Extra talk with Richard, only available to our Patreon legends, but you can head up there now and join the ranks. patreon.com/vinylguide. And we thank you so much for that. And that's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please share these episodes on social media. Put them on Facebook, tweet them out on Twitter, put them in the Reddit forums or the Facebook groups. That is always appreciated. And of course, you could always leave us a positive review. We love that, and it helps so much. Apple Podcasts or Spotify, 5 out of 5 stars. Saying something nice, that is always appreciated. And we'll be back shortly with a brand new episode. So until we talk next time, get out there and buy some records, people. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Follow The Vinyl Guide in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever podcast app you use and enjoy the full back catalog of episodes of The Vinyl Guide podcast. Thanks again for listening.